what we wanted to talk about today, we just had a big discussion off the air about how we were going to handle this. But Marie was down at the protest in Wellington, which is, in some ways, it's old news, but in a lot of ways, a lot of damage has been done to relationships. And I've regularly pointed out the very one-sided nature of the media's reporting on the protest, which they do with every protest. It's not unusual. It's not surprising.
No.
So that they felt like they were part of the battle on behalf of the government or something. I don't know. That's conjecture. But a large part, and a lot of people, I see a lot of people very angry about the protest or expressing confusion, like what's with all these crazy people. And I think the first thing toward trying, because we have to rebuild our community time and time again, actually, after the media does stuff like this. But one of the important steps, or one of the important aspects of that, is actually understanding from the other side's point of view. And there's issues with that at the moment. But Marie went down there and has, I guess, some observations. And as a counsellor, I think your observations will be maybe a little different or a little more nuanced. I think nuanced is the word than if someone like me had gone down there. So. So why did you go down, Marie? And you weren't there at the end, were you?
No.
Okay, so we won't talk about
on the Friday before the police,
jumped in.
Yeah, there we go. I didn't know the right language. unusual for a council. They've got a lot of feedback, Aaron. I'm hearing voices.
Oh, you are, because of the little microphone here and the people outside.
That's, oh, is that what that
it's
is?
Not going on the air. It's just you that's hearing it.
Okay.
Luckily, right, lucky cool. You.
Lucky me. All right. I'll try and quieten the voices that I hear. Okay. So why did I go down? I guess, I was struggling with this all along, obviously, like a lot of people. I got vaccinated. I didn't want to, Aaron. I tried to, get out of it in many ways.
Yep.
But I ended up because I'm a counsellor. I love my work that I do. I'm born to do this. And I weighed up the costs for me and decided that the best thing for me to do was get vaccinated. But that didn't change my curiosity, my feelings around, what this was all about. So, when the protest happened in Wellington, first off, I was kind of a little bit skeptical. I can't even say the word. Skeptical.
That's what you're trying
there
to say.
Go.
Skeptical. I think.
Because I don't like pushing against authority. I actually don't. I think that make life easy and go with it. Unless there's, you want to make a real stand about something, it's probably not worth it. And yeah, so I watched with interest for a while. And then probably the day before I left to go down, I just got this overwhelming fear. I'd been watching a few live feeds of people down there working, feeding people, some of the talks that were happening down there. I was just watching the live feeds and the people that were walking around, and I was thinking, man, these are just ordinary New Zealanders. I feel like, this is something that I want to get a feel for. I want to understand what's going on here and how this is all working. So I got this overwhelming feeling to go down. Being vaccinated, I could go to a hotel. my husband couldn't come with me because he's not vaccinated, so I was able to catch a flight and fly down and catch. I got a hotel room 5 minutes walk from the protest, from the grounds. So I would come out of my hotel. I stayed for three days, three nights on my own. I didn't know anybody going down. I wanted to have the whole experience of what this was without any other influences around me, opinions or, So I put my big girl pants on and I flew down, found my way. It was costly, but, this is my cost. I did this because I wanted that experience and I wanted to understand. This is who I am as a counsellor. I want to know what these people that are just everyday people, what they're all doing down there for the last week and a half, 2 weeks, and how are they surviving and what's this really like? So it was quite an experience for me, Aaron. one I will treasure forever. It was an amazing eye-opener for me, watching humanity work again in community in ways that I haven't seen it work for a very, very long time.
So why do you say the community was happening? What were your observations?
Oh, it was wonderful. You know, I probably expected to walk into a smelly kind of dirty kind of area because that's what was portrayed. I didn't see any rubbish on the ground. Everyone was always picking up rubbish and cleaning up, and they had hay down because of the rain that had fallen. You know, they needed that, and people brought hay to keep the grounds dry. They had a play centre set up for the kids. They had obviously kitchens set up. They had information tents set up. They had a first aid tent set up. And people could get up on the main stage and talk. You know, anybody could get up and express their what had happened to them, their loss, maybe loss of life, loss of a job, loss of homes, loss of relationships and families, a lot of grief, huge amount of grief in the separation that this has caused in family. And I think that's probably what I felt the most, is the pain of people who love their family, but this has caused such division within that, and it's hard to then talk about it with family members because everyone gets so upset. Because there's so many different ideas around this. What I saw down there, like I said, I didn't know anybody. I went to all the church services. They had two church services every day up at the Anglican Church, which is actually the first entry point the police actually came in from, was the Anglican Church.
Okay.
Was for me very, very upsetting because it was such a beautiful environment.
So there's an Anglican church right next to Parliament Grounds.
Yes.
And the Hoover was running the church. Was it to anyone who wanted to come for church on Sunday?
No, there was a, I don't know who they were. They were Christian. I knew that. I didn't need to know anything else. It's quite evident when you're listening to somebody what you're hearing.
Yeah, yeah.
You can kind of pick it up. What I loved seeing is that there weren't just Christians at these services. There were all sorts of people there enjoying and just being in that environment and soaking it up. Apart from Trevor Mallard's messages coming out over the speaker every hour and his opinion around this group embarrassing New Zealand to the world, which is the message he was portraying.
I think his behaviour was a bit embarrassing, to be honest. I think a lot of people would think
it was
that.
Very embarrassing. I would have loved to have, I wanted to go and knock on the door and say, hey, come out, let's have a chat. But that was, obviously.
As a counsellor, do you think there was some work there for you, Marie?
Oh, there's a lot of work there.
With Trev.
Aaron, if I was going to be truly honest, and about this, what came out of this for me as a counsellor, and like I say, I'm going to be very honest about this, I have a question towards the government in who checks in on their mental health. When we have high-powered positions in our jobs, when we hold a lot of authority and a lot of decision-making that affects a lot of people, often those jobs are also supported by psychologists who, you do tests to see if you're actually capable to make these decisions without being triggered in some way from past experiences.
So people in the police and ambulance services and those sorts of jobs.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay, yep.
Okay, so we're talking about the jobs in our country that have an effect on all of us. So my question, and I nearly got up on the main stage to ask it because nobody's actually asked it, is who checks on our government's mental health and what do they pass to do a checklist like the rest of us have to? I mean, I have a clinical supervisor that I see every month.
As a counsellor yourself, that's standard, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. Balances and checks yeah. all along. And everyone in this area of work or who works with people know that we have to be accountable somewhere. There's an accountability. So, yeah, I'm very serious about this question. I'm not just saying it.
It's a really good point, but I worry that if they did that,
they might not find anybody.
Yeah, there might not be enough people left around the country.
Well, I tell you what, how interesting would that be? And we might actually end up with a leader that can make balanced decision based on the fact that they are healthy enough to do that.
I actually think we had one for a while. Mm-hmm. I know that Jacinda is really unpopular now, but I watched her after the mosque attacks, and it was the 3-year anniversary yesterday. And early on in COVID, when she was, she's certainly more empathetic than most politicians, and I think mm-hmm. she was using that to make decisions. But then as time has gone on, and I think as other people within the Labour Party and other people also, you talk about checking in on the mental health of our leaders in Parliament, but also the people leading the bureaucracy as well, would yes. be another thing. And
absolutely, I think judges, that, everybody.
And I think the siege mentality started up at some point and certainly would have been really strong while the protesters were there. A lot of them probably felt a bit afraid. And certainly Trevor Mallard was epitomised that kind of siege mentality. And what he did was kind of funny, but also not very becoming for the Speaker of the House of Parliament either.
Yeah, funny when you're on the outside looking in, but on the inside hearing that, it was embarrassing to have a leader in our country respond like that. I felt embarrassed.
So stuff was still going on, was it? Because I thought he did something sort of once at the start and that was it, but was there...
Oh, my goodness, no.
It was broadcast all the time?
Oh, every hour.
Saying what or doing what?
All the time.
Same words or songs?
You're trespassing, you're on Parliament grounds... that was one of his messages. The other one, that we were an embarrassment to New Zealand.
Really? Whose voice?
Trevor Mallard's.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, this is, when you're down there, you're a part of it. But the thing is, there were speakers down there, so his voice was kind of muffled in the background in the end. You couldn't really hear it, but I wasn't there in the night time. I went home. I could easily find out, but I'm pretty sure that was playing all night long.
Mm. Well, based on the other things he's doing, it wouldn't surprise me in the least that it played all night long.
Yeah, yeah. And I ended up, I was sitting outside again, not knowing anybody, I'm just sort of sitting there, and somebody comes up and chats to me, and I'm talking away, I was sitting outside the kitchen tent where the Papahone's tent is, and I'd been watching him online. So I obviously mentioned in a conversation that I liked serving, and this one of the cooks in there, he was actually a chef. They had chefs in there, came out and said, oh, do you want to work in the kitchen? I'm like, totally want to work in the kitchen. I love doing this stuff. I love serving. So he said, come on. So I put some gloves on, and the first dish I opened up that I was serving from had fresh snapper and crayfish in it. I mean, I don't even eat that well at home. We're yeah. talking, this was king's food.
So where was the food coming from, Marie?
Well, while I was in there, I saw three beasts, probably a couple of pigs and a beast being brought in. I saw that. I've got videos of them. They were chefs who were cutting these beasts up. They had generators and fridges, it was all being cooked out the back, and they were just at it all day long.
So these have been donated by people. I heard that there were farmers donating whatever they were farming.
The beasts were obviously donated from farmers. The seafood were coming from divers and fish. I saw them walking in. I saw men walking in with dinner. You know, just a bag of kina and taking it to the kitchen. The kitchen people, you couldn't get close to the actual freedom camp itself. You couldn't drive in, obviously. So if you wanted to donate food, you had to walk probably 10 minutes to the supermarket, fill your trolley up, and then and then push your trolley back to the Freedom Camp, all the way to the tent, and then take the trolley back again. That was the only way to get food in.
Yeah.
So it was constantly coming in. So even myself, I donated. You couldn't help but want to be a part of that, because the serving, when I served out food, it was so amazing, Aaron, to be serving like that people. And we're talking like that, there would have been a thousand people lining up for a lunch.
Right.
It just was continual people coming through. And the food that was given was prepared and given and beautifully.
Sounds like a gift.
Those that had been hurt in the protest, like there was some people where the police had there'd been some altercation a few days earlier, and there was, I heard a guy, because I was serving, I was hearing things. The guy had been, both his eyes were closed. He'd been attacked by one of the police.
Yeah.
And anyway, he was in the tent and he couldn't really open his eyes yet. And they were feeding him. They were making sure he had food and water and looking after him. And so nobody got left out. This was a community of people who weren't used to being together, totally had different backgrounds and different opinions and different worldviews even, but because of their common cause, they were able to put their differences aside and work together in a cashless society,
yeah,
where everything was running beautifully. They had gardens, and I saw gardens, Aaron. Okay, you know when they at the end there, where they see the bulldozers coming in and bulldozing everything. Well, there was a part of that camp that had gardens set up. Like there were lettuces and tomatoes and plants that they'd gone and brought. And they'd put beautiful, used wood to make the gardens, you know, like squares or whatever, oblong squares, yeah, whatever. So they were all with vegetables in them. All around the rose gardens there, they had planted lettuces and tomatoes. You know, food. They were putting in food. I mean, you know, some people would say, well, that was a waste of time because it wasn't going to be forever. But you got to understand that this is the way that people, they were showing how they were living. This is how we live. Can we live together? We can do this, even though it's short term. Separating people doesn't work. We can't be separated. It's our human nature is actually to be in community. So to see people working together, like I say, from all walks of life and putting their differences down and just being and doing life together for that common cause was really an amazing thing to see and experience.
I think the sense of community is something that, because there was a little bit of reporting on that, and there were people who, like when the police moved in, who journalists were reporting were quite distraught about having not been in there again, and I know talking to people, they were really confused again because of the one-sided nature. And as I said before, it's a standard way to report that the media does of protests. It's always very one-sided.
Yeah.
But yes. I, like people were saying, like why are they so sad about it? And I'm like, they were, I can't remember what I said. They like being, they were having fun. People are having fun, and it's meaningful, and there's a sense of community that they may not have had before they went there.
Yeah. So that sense of fun that you're talking about, that's an interesting one, because I think that people, you know, that didn't go down and looking in, they were thinking, oh, it's just one big Party Central.
I'm not talking about partying, though. I'm talking about the fun of being in a group of people with a common cause. And I've had that. I didn't go to this protest. I've been to other protests. And when there's a really large group of people,
yeah,
and it just feels good.
Yeah, well, look, when I say all walks of life, I saw people in wheelchairs. I saw very old people. I saw people with Down syndrome, families with their children with Down syndrome. I saw all nationalities, all walks of life. Some looked like they didn't fit there at all. This was not their environment, but they were there. They were there, and they were making their, wanting to be heard. and in New Zealand, you know, we're pioneering people. The spirit of New Zealanders are pioneers. We're used to breaking ground and moving forward, you know, and working together to do that. We're an island, Aaron. You know, the one thing that I probably got from this too is when I did see the police in riot gear, because I was there for part of that, and it was scary for me. I didn't like it. I couldn't be around it for long. I had to walk away because the thought of yeah, it was not a nice feeling. It was, I actually commend the people that stood with their backs to the police because that would not have been any. I would have run, Aaron. Truly, and look at the lifestyle I come from.
And no one would blame you either.
Yeah, but look at where I come from. You would think that I would want to face that and get angry at it, but actually it was scary. It was intimidating. I didn't like it. This is the police that I want to trust. These are the people that I want to be able to call on, and it didn't feel, it felt really threatening and horrible, and I didn't like it at all.
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
was a very sad feeling for me, very, very sad to see that.
Yeah.
And to experience that. So I didn't stay around that for long because it really wasn't what that camp was about. That was the bit of poison on the outside, unfortunately.
So, but, folks, you know, I just want to sort of leap in and just remind people we're talking to Marie, local councillor therapist, and we are talking about her experience at the protest that's now been wrapped up, shall we say, down in Wellington. And as I said at the start, one of the things that's upset me about all the issues that have gone on around this is the division that's been created in the community. And one of the things that helps with division is just understanding what's happening for other people. And I'll keep saying that the reporting for what was happening at the protest was incredibly one-sided from the media. There was a little bit of stuff going in and giving some insight, but it's very standard for this to happen with protests. I've been at protests. I've seen and I've seen the way things are reported, how numbers are downplayed and things like that. It always happens. It's not just this protest. It's very normal. Now, the media is part of the establishment, I guess, which is part of, we could go into a lot of detail about that, but that's, I just wanted to remind people of why we're talking about this morning. My feeling is that to heal division, there needs to be some understanding, and we need to understand what it was like for people down there. But Marie, what about the issue of, because unlike a lot of protests, there was a lot of ammunition with this protest for the media to paint a bad picture.
Yes,
a lot of people doing totally. Things. And I was wondering myself, I was thinking, I bet a lot of people down there, the protesters who are peaceful protesters, are actually pretty frustrated with this. So were there attempts to try to deal with the people who were going a bit aggro?
So the interesting thing about that is that you had the Freedom Camp, which was the government grounds, and every part of government ground was covered with tents, okay? We're not just talking outside of government ground. I'm talking there were tents everywhere that was government ground.
Yeah.
So when you went further down the road and you were on the main road, and I don't know the name of that road, but anyway, there were protesters down there that were far more vocal. That had their signs out, and that's where the riot police too would stand at times. So that yes, we're more vocal, but certainly not threatening in any way. Threatening? Did I in my time down there in those 3 days? Did I see threatening people? What I saw were people trying to get their message out the best way that they could. Some were more vocal on the outside. Inside the camp, it was more about getting up on the stage and speaking your truth, what had happened to you, your family, your experience. So in the camp, it was very, very peaceful, like super peaceful. Outside of the camp, you would have had more people being more vocal, for sure, and wanting the public to know. Now, the shops that people were saying were shut down, right? I was walking past those shops every day. I personally don't see why those shops couldn't have been opened. There were no, in the shops that I walked past that were closed, there was no protesters up there. I don't know why those shops weren't open. So Yeah, there's different levels on how this has affected people, and I'm sure that people have their own stories about that, and they will, and those stories matter. But at the end of the day, the word community says common unity. We're in community because we're a unit. We come together. Division has nothing about community. So that's why we're struggling with this. Is because for once we've come up against something that has divided community. It's divided families, it's divided friendships, it's divided loved ones. And we're not built for this. We're built to be in community. So it's very foreign for us to behave like this towards each other, because like I said, we're an island. We can't go anywhere in New Zealand without knowing another person at some point, right?
Yeah.
So for me, those police officers that were standing in front of those protesters like that, you can guarantee that somebody in that crowd, they would have known them. And that to me was extremely disheartening and painful to even consider, because I couldn't in my mind or in my heart do that, you know. And so I struggle in the authority sense to think, well, you're attacking your own people. Mm. And this is wrong. And it was wrong. It was just horribly wrong.
I just want to come back to what I was asking before about, because you did tell, I think you said to me off the air that there were people who the protest group decided shouldn't be there anymore, yeah. Or turf them out, you said?
Well, we didn't turf them out. What happened is that, you know, because you've got, like I said, a whole group of people, hundreds and hundreds, maybe 1,000 people all being together who come from different walks of life. So, of course, some went down there with, hey, let's just, you know, great, we're all together,
yeah.
That starts to get weeded out over time, and then you get the ones who are really there for what they're there for. But how they dealt with that is that they would get together, the leaders of each kind of, you see leaders rise, they just naturally do. And so the leaders would get together in the evening and talk about, you know, what's happening and how can we make it safer in here. And so that was their main priority, safeness for the camp people and the children. No, on the sign on the camp when you entered it was no drugs, no alcohol. And they had security people who were just normal people walking around. They had walkie-talkies. They had it set up pretty good in there. So they had a lot of security walking around 24 hours, the whole camp. In outside of the camp and connecting in, and would, if there was something untoward happening, they would work with that and negotiate with the person to move on. Yeah.
So there were attempts from within the protest group to try to get the more aggro people to tone it down.
Well, I think it was more about you know, that communication. Like, come on, guys, we're here. This is really important to us. We're here because we're losing our livelihoods. We've lost things, you know. So this isn't a fly-by-nighter. This isn't going to go away. So as the heaviness of why people were there really became apparent, then it was natural for those other ones to move on, because there was no room for them to be like that. Because that's not what this was about. This was about people coming out of their homes for three solid weeks, giving their everything to be heard, just to deliver a message about mandates and vaccines that had affected their lives tremendously, and they just wanted to be heard. Now, as a counsellor, and when I understand leadership, and I get it very well. So for me, when a leader cannot face the people, especially when there's a great void between them and they're quite safe, yeah, that's disheartening for me. There was nothing to want to shy away from. A good leader would have come out and addressed. And those people would have gone home, Aaron, if they had been addressed, if they had been communicated with, even if they had heard what they didn't want to hear. The fact that they had been heard, that's what people wanted. They wanted to be heard.
So there was, in my view, it became, and I don't know if people in the protest, how many understood this, but it became a PR battle. So I know that the government would have been, their advisors would have told them, don't go and talk to them because you will legitimise the protest. And they were trying to paint the protest as a very illegitimate protest, which they did successfully. And the police, my belief is the police only moved in once they were satisfied that the majority of New Zealanders watching on TV and in the papers and online, once the majority of them were convinced that it was an unruly protest of crazy people and that it needed, they all needed to be turfed out. And yeah, even so, there's still a lot of people who don't agree with that or don't agree, didn't like what they saw. But I think that PR battle was, that was where the real battle was happening. And I don't know how many people kind of were cognizant of that.
Also, Aaron, that we're not used to this in New Zealand and we only have so much in our police force. And there were actually more people, at that protest than there were police, okay? So in the eyes of the police, that's quite threatening. So,
oh, yeah, I wouldn't want to be a police officer there. No way.
And they, I'm not sure, I don't know how they gathered so many police, you know, so I just want to take a step back here because, yes, it's a PR thing, but also the police needed to strategize and have a clear plan in place on how they were going to move in on this group.
Well, they did. Easy. They had a plan.
They were practicing that plan in a park further down the road.
Oh, okay, right.
Okay, so this couldn't have happened just on a whim.
So, yes,
a PR battle, but also a planning battle by the police to be able to even know how to get into this the safest way they possibly could. So, yes, it might look like a PR battle, but the police were strategising for many, many days.
Oh, yeah. What I'm saying is that the PR battle is to legitimise the police moving in because New Zealanders aren't terribly comfortable with police acting like that.
I'll tell you what, if Jacinda or somebody had come out, we wouldn't have needed that. We never needed that. They didn't need the police down there doing that. If there had been some communication. You've just got a text, you're right.
Yeah, you can see. Don't tell the listeners. We're supposed to keep this a secret.
But okay.
We're on Zoom and Marie can see my head spinning around.
Okay. I saw lots of, you know, all the messages that you saw, the graffiti that people probably thought they saw on the buildings and the concrete walls and everything like that. It was all chalk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was no paintings or pens. It was all chalk. And I must admit, some amazing paintings. I saw our great leaders, Nelson Mandela and Mahatma Gandhi, being drawn on the concrete walls. Some of our great leaders that have spoken into our freedoms and why they're important. I saw just amazing things written all over the place, which was wonderful. Kids were drawing, and it was great to see. You know, people might have said, "Oh, that's just graffiti." It was chalk.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It was going to come off very, very easily.
Hey, so Marie, I want to, before we go, and I'll just remind people that for me, part of the motivation for this discussion is just wanting people who saw most things through the media to understand what it was like for the protesters down there and just get a bit of a different perspective. The first step to like trying to heal the division we've got in our community and our communities is understanding a little bit about the other side. But as a councillor, like, and you mentioned two people who had splits in their families over this, and how can we heal the division that's been created by some decisions, which just decisions are made, and the media has chosen to exaggerate things. How do we get back home and heal that?
Yeah, I think our narrative needs to change, Aaron. You know, we're not in the same place as we were 2 years ago. You know, we're not this COVID isn't unknown to us now. It's known. We're not so afraid of it now. We can deal with it. We need to move on. We need to rebuild. We need to drop mandates and vaccine passports. I'm going to put that out there, and I'm going to say that because it's a waste of time now.
Well stay tuned, because this afternoon there's an announcement coming about it.
There you go. So, I'm just telling you first. that's where we need to start, because the division is coming from, no, you can't come in my shop, no, you can't come in here, you can't do that, and you can't go to the movies, and you can't get on a, you know, take a test and everything. It's that's where the division is coming from. So as soon as those are dropped, then we can, I think, that we can start to rebuild and change our narrative.
Do you think people are still fearful of unvaccinated people, or just, I know some people who've got poor health would generally be fearful. Well, so how do you talk about sort of thing?
I'd talk about it, let's just roll past the last 2.5 years as though they didn't happen, and let's just look at the common flu and influenza and how much we looked after our old people through all of those every winter, you know. I mean, we are not children. If you're sick, stay home. You know, we've got to really value other people and not get that mentality that I've talked about before on here, in regards to suck it up, go to work, take some Panadol, here's a throaty, carry on. Yep. We need to actually pull back from that and go, okay, I'm unwell. I probably need 3 days off to get over this, get myself better, and get back to work. That's what we need to get back to, is actually caring about our health. Other people's health. Don't put other people at risk. If you're unwell, stay home. When 2-year-olds who need to be led through this, you know, like I said, growing up, when I was a kid, you know, when we got sick, my mum would put me to bed with a colouring in book, 3 days. As soon as I came out looking like I was interested in TV and the kids' programs at 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, or whatever it was, Lassie that came on, Little House on the Prairie or something, she knew I was getting better and I was back at school. I mean, we've got to get back to this sort of stuff, taking care of ourselves and giving ourselves to our immunity, our immune system time to heal and restore, and not put others at risk. So now let's go forward 2.5 years. Now we're dealing with this, obviously. We need to keep that same mentality. Understand when you're unwell, stay home. We need to make sure our jobs are robust enough that they are supporting the unwell so that we can get over it and not suck it up and get back to work, which is what we've been told for the last how many years.
There was the macho attitude I certainly got. I would note that I think that was it last year the government extended the amount of sick leave people could have? So
yeah, I think they did. I think it's about 2 weeks now,
yeah,
which I think is getting a lot better. I mean, obviously, I've had COVID. It took me 3 days. I was absolutely knocked by it. It's probably taken me another week to get my energy back, and I think it's going to be another week. I feel like I'm really on top of it.
Yeah.
So it was, for me, it was more coming out of it and getting my energies back and trying to boost up my system again, which is really important. We can't expect others to take care of us. We need to take the responsibility of our health. If you know somebody who is in your family and you're unwell and they're immune compromised, don't go and visit them. Ring them.
Yeah. So there's all that. Hey, we're running out of time, Marie. So, what are your hopes? How do you see? Maybe we won't forget the things that divide us, but how do you see that lifting from us? And when's that going to lift?
Yeah.
Or how? How?
I've been, I've clicked into a couple of people that I've liked the live feeds from in Wellington, and I've continued to remain in contact. And I think that's the wonderful thing about this, is that my community has grown through this experience. And what shines out for me is that we need to get back to our humanity, Aaron. We need to get back to being human and caring and not allowing this red herring almost to separate us from the things that matter the most, which is family, relationship, community. Without those, we don't exist. And we're individual islands, and we're not created to be individual islands on our own. We're created to be in community. That's so important for our mental health, for our physical health, for our maturing and growing. It comes from being in community and being with others that aren't the same as us and do have different opinions, and being able to still live within that and hold a common ground, and that is our humanity towards each other.
Yeah. Okay, folks, we'll be talking to Marie, who's a local counsellor therapist, and thank you for your time, Marie, this morning.
You're welcome.
And maybe next time we'll talk in the trees. Actually, what's the date?
People might find that. Okay, so that's interesting. We'll be talking in the trees. Okay.
Well, yeah, no, it's. I've got seats. We go. Most of the regular listeners will know that a lot of the time I've been interviewing people down in the trees between the community house and the tower. But it's just getting colder in the morning, and it'll be close to the end of daylight saving by then. So I don't know.
When does that happen, Aaron?
Oh, I think it's the first weekend of April. I think that's when it usually happens. I don't want to, don't quote me on that, folks, because I've put people wrong before.
Yeah, let's not get too sad too soon.
yeah, that too. But yeah, anyway, Marie, thank you for your time this morning.